I interviewed some locals and revisited the site. But the majority of responses can really just be condensed into this one quote.
I don't even know what you're talking about, and you're a bit weird for caring about this in the first place. Can you stop wasting my time?
You really want to watch it to see what happens, but you're sad because you realise you're never going to see new episodes again.
You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Gruth. Today on the show, we have two cases to solve. They're both about mysterious signs in public places, one in Sydney and one in Melbourne. One of them's going to get solved and one won't. Which one, you ask? It's a mystery. Our first case takes us into the equinox. Along the way, look out for bad language.
Hi there.
Enough is enough.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
And psychically attacked Bob.
He had his awakening during the procession of the equinox,
which is known as the Great Shift.
According to astrologers, the equinox is the date of the angle of the Earth's rotational changes. This change in the Earth's tilt is known as the precession of the equinox. It happens approximately once every 26,000 years, and this is the start of a new astrological age. So a month ago, my friend Renee and I were driving through the inner city suburb of Everleigh to see a local art exhibition. As we parked our car at the end of a street, we saw someone. He had a bright aged beanie and was wearing clashing prints. He had an unkempt and patchy beard. He then scoped out the surroundings, as if to see if anyone was watching him. Then he taped a poster to a telegraph pole. It was at this point that we made eye contact. He shot us an incisive and vindictive stare that completely stunned us. He then dashed off into an alleyway. The vibe he gave off was so off-putting that I felt completely compelled to dig deeper.
Hi there.
My name is Snowflake.
And many of you have been referring to me as Yeah.
When choosing to antagonise and psychically attack Bob.
He had his awakening during the precession of the equinox, which is known as the Great Shift.
Weird, right? Well, those were the opening lines of this post that completely hijacked my thoughts.
Enough is enough.
Hi there, my name is Snowflake, and many of you have been referring to me as Yeah when choosing to antagonise and physically attack Bob.
When I met him, he was a full-blown junkie, and we agreed that he should change his addictive substance abuse ways, which he has managed to accomplish, even though there has been much resistance from many of you. There's really no need to harass or annoy him, because most, if not all, the stuff you have heard to convince you to act and behave in such narcissistic and psychopathic ways are complete and utter lies.
Now, what was the purpose for all of this? And whose point of view was it even coming from? The man who taped the poster? Or the woman in the photo? I couldn't help but wonder, so I read on.
The bar that he used to buy drugs from is a fucking hole, and the douchebags that tried to ruin his life are deciding to change are just that. Fucking losers that got older but never actually grew up.
Until now, that is, because my decision is to let him out. And as such, that is their decision too.
Therefore, any attempt to work, harass, or annoy him in any way, shape, or form will simply not be tolerated.
Enough is enough.
This is typically the point where most people would have just simply left this alone and enjoyed their Saturday. But I was invested, and I knew I had to dig deeper. So, I convinced my friend to drive through Everleigh and search for more clues. And then we saw it. Another man, wearing a cowboy hat, sticking up the very same poster. He also carried a tote bag filled with more copies of the same poster. We drove up to him, and he ran. And then he dipped into an alleyway that was way too narrow for anyone to drive through, so he also escaped. Ashamed of my lack of PI prowess and desperate to get an understanding of this, I took it to the web to dig a bit deeper. I posted on Reddit, Craigslist, and Facebook groups, desperate for information. Some of my posts were deleted, and then I received a text message that simply said, "suspicious." Anxious to get an answer, I interviewed some locals and revisited the site. But the majority of responses can really just be condensed into this one quote.
"I don't even know what you're talking about, and you're a bit weird for caring about this in the first place. Can you stop wasting my time?"
Without an answer, and without satisfaction, it appears that I too have been blinded by the equinox.
That story was by Lily Acuto. Thanks to Reginald Harris and Thomas Husband for their production assistance. The supervising producer was Alison Chan. You're listening to All The Best. I'm Samantha Groth. Do you have a passion for solving mysteries and audio storytelling? All The Best is a show for new and emerging audio documentary makers to pitch, produce, and learn, and really solve the mystery of what it means to make a good story. If you pitch an awesome story idea to us, we'll also pay you with a supervising producer. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. Three years ago, Lindsay Green found three small, obscure plaques in RMIT's city campus. They had super specific times and dates on them, but it wasn't quite clear what those times and dates were referring to. In this story, Lindsay and co-investigator Aaron Lewin put on their detective hats.
In a small corner of the RMIT campus in Melbourne's CBD, there is a mystery. To find this mystery, you need to enter the campus through a series of narrow laneways off Latrobe Street and walk ahead to a courtyard. The courtyard has three sides, like a triangle. It's quiet. There's not a lot of foot traffic and sunlight struggles to reach it. On one side of the courtyard, there's a wall with a mural. In front of the mural is a long timber bench. And this is where the mystery comes in. On the bench is a small brass plaque, barely longer than a smartphone. The plaque has a date and time on it. 11:15 to 11:47 p.m, 20th July 2002. On one side of the bench is another plaque. Same size, same font. The date on this plaque is 1:15 p.m. Friday 19th July 2002. On the other side of the bench is a third plaque with another date, 1978 to 1979. There's no sign or message to explain the plaques or who put them there. But someone put them there. So who? And why? And when? And what do the dates mean? I had so many questions and I needed to find out the answers. I first noticed the plaques in August of 2015. My friend Anna and I were making a podcast about online dating called It's a Match. The studio where we recorded the podcast opened onto the courtyard. We spent every Sunday for 12 weeks making the podcast. And on one of those Sundays, we noticed the first plaque, 11:15 to 11:47 p.m, 20th July 2002. Over the next few weeks, we noticed the other two plaques as well. Anna moved back to New Zealand the following year, but I never stopped thinking about the plaques. I knew this mystery was too big to try and solve on my own, so I brought in reinforcement.
Lindsay and I both have an interest in quirks across Melbourne. One day, Lindsay let me in on the plaques and the murals in the courtyard outside Building 6. I glanced at the mural, but the plaques really caught my attention. Plaques normally tell you why they exist. In memory of X, who lived between Y and Z. This bench was donated by John Smith, who fed the ducks at this spot every day. But these had no explanation. 11:15 to 11:47 p.m. struck me as vague and indistinct. It seemed loaded with secrecy and meaning. But we quickly learned that solving this mystery was going to be more challenging than we first thought. Like all good detectives, we started looking on the internet. Google, Twitter, Reddit, Trove, RMIT archives, there was no trace of information online. I contacted the architectural historian of the National Trust, and even he didn't have the answers.
I decided to check in with Anna to see if she remembered the plaques. I also wanted to know if she still wondered about them in the same way that they've been on my mind. Maybe the view from New Zealand would mean that she saw the plaques differently now.
Like, I can't say that I've spent time going, God damn, I wish I'd researched those plaques before I left Australia. But definitely as soon as you messaged me, I was like, oh yeah, the plaques. Like, I don't remember, clearly I don't remember any of the details, but I definitely remember, I guess I remember the mystery of them. Like, when you messaged me, I was like, yeah, those plaques for sure. What the hell was up with those plaques? My mind just goes like to a dark place, you know? It's like, what happened in those terrible 38 minutes that would mean that you'd want to put a plaque up? You know, like, what kind of assault happened here? Because it's like a weird sort of enclosed space as well. It's not like a beautiful, bright, airy park where a lot of students would gather and chat. It's just like one little kind of dark niche of the university. Yeah, because it's not huge. It's like the size of what, like a bedroom, maybe two bedrooms put together. And it's kind of enclosed on all sides, but with a walkway area. So it does make me think, like, who got hurt here? I mean, plaques sometimes commemorate dark things like a particular battle or a war, but also often, like, plaques on benches mostly tend to be like in parks for an old person who's died. Like, you know, you go to the park and it's like, in loving memory of Norma, 1943 to 2002, who loved this park so dearly. You know, when I see a plaque that's like, in loving memory of Norma, I don't have any questions about that. I'm like, oh, that's sweet. That's nice. Whatever. You know, it doesn't make you want to delve into it. But a plaque with just dates? Like, why?
We still didn't know the answer, but we did have a hypothesis. Maybe the plaques had something to do with the mural. There is no date on the mural, but a quick search online revealed it was painted between 1978 to 1979, the same dates as one of the plaques. On one side of the mural are the words Community Art Workers Mural, sponsored by RMIT Union. Underneath is a list of names. We decided to choose the first name on the list and see if they knew anything. The first name belonged to a man named Jeff Hogg.
It really began in about 1972, and that was a period when the Vietnam War was just coming to an end. That had been a radicalizing experience for a lot of people of my generation, people who were conscripted into the army, but also people who saw that as an unjust war, and so it was a period of protest and dissent. So that was my immediate experience through the 1960s. I was looking for ways of bringing together the interest I had in social change with my vocation as an artist. And so I think it was 72 we set up that group, and it was made up of writers, visual artists, performers, musicians, community activists, and so on.
That was the reason why you decided to place a mural in a university?
Two reasons, really. One, we had that chance. And the other reason was the story to tell around the origins of RMIT as an experiment in community education. We really wanted to do something around the origins of RMIT as the Working Men's College.
We felt that this was the right time to ask about the plaques. We were nervous. We had no other leads, but we were pretty confident Jeff had the answers.
No, they were part of some of the architectural changes that happened with the redevelopment of Story Hall. My feeling is it's a sort of poetic work that was developed by the architects as a type of urban poetry. And, I've speculated on the meaning like you.
Do you think people associate the plaques with the mural?
Well, I hadn't thought so until you asked me the question, but now I imagine they might. You know, I think Ian McDougall was an architect associated with it. I think I might try and get in touch with him and see what he had to say.
Going into our interview with Jeff, we were so sure he was going to have the answers, but now it was starting to feel like a real mystery. It would have been too easy for the first person we spoke to have all the answers. and solving mysteries shouldn't be easy. Following Jeff's advice, I contacted Ian. Ian said he didn't know, but suggested I contact another architect, Peter Elliott. Peter Elliott didn't know either, but suggested I contact the RMIT Gallery. I contacted the RMIT Gallery, and a man named John replied. He didn't know where the plaques came from, but wondered if they were part of an undocumented student project.
We didn't seem to be getting anywhere fast.
But one day, I decided to walk through the laneways a little slower than usual. I couldn't stop thinking about what John from the RMIT Gallery said about it being an undocumented student project. If it is a student project, I thought, surely it would be bigger than three plaques. And that's when I noticed more plaques. Same design, same font, same obscure dates installed at random places around the laneways. I messaged Aaron. Aaron, I found more plaques. At least five new ones all around the laneway. The plot thickens.
More plaques opened up a world of possibilities. How big was this project? Is it confined to RMIT? What does it all mean? I was so focused on the three plaques that I lost sight of the other plaques around me. Walking down the narrow laneway that is next to the mural, I immediately noticed other plaques. They were printed in the same style with obscure dates and times attached. That laneway leads to Building 8. There's a coffee cart and two baristas. I asked them if they had noticed the brass plaques. One of the baristas, Andrew, had been studying and working at RMIT for decades. He had noticed one plaque, 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. nightly, and had wondered what it was about. With a sense of wonder, he left the coffee cart and we went for a walk around the campus. After determining that the plaques were all between Building 6, 8 and 28, the entire area seemed to be brass-coloured. They were on different walls, high up, low down, behind trees, in areas under construction, one right behind where they made coffee every day. Ultimately, we discovered 12 plaques and evidence of plenty more that had been taken down or had disappeared. Andrew was invested in this now. He had ideas, but no answers. He suggested that the person behind them has probably left RMIT. The next day, I looked to see if there are any arts or architecture professors that had been at RMIT for the last 20 years. A name that popped up was Professor David Thomas, who, according to his bio, had been at the campus since 1992. I sent him an email and he replied. Hi Aaron, I'm not sure, but they may belong to the work of Professor Sand Helsel, who was in the School of Architecture. I believe she is now retired, but I vaguely remember that her work addressed time and site. I might be wrong, but perhaps this helps. Best, David. I didn't hold out much hope, but at 9:57 I received an email. Dear Aaron, your search is over.
We couldn't believe it. After all our dead ends, we were finally going to meet the person behind the plaques. We met Sand on campus on a Saturday morning.
I'm Sand Helsel. I'm professor of architecture at RMIT University. And I did a project in 2002, which is why I'm here. It was a commission for the Melbourne Festival, curated by Juliana Egberg. I was one of four architects, artists, as part of a project called The Unused, where we use the back lanes of RMIT to really talk about the unused parts of the city. So my piece was entitled Five Walks, and I designed five walks through the same laneway space.
The walk Aaron and I were interested in was called The Walk Through the Ages. It was a historical walk of the RMIT laneways, but not in the way that we traditionally think about history. Participants in the Melbourne Festival show would wear a headset and listen to an audio guide as they walked through the laneways. Sand installed 38 plaques in the original show. Participants would walk from plaque to plaque and learn about the history behind each one. There were two voices guiding people through the walk, the official history and the unofficial history. The official history referred to events that could be found in a history book, like a prime minister opening a new building, or a tree being planted. The unofficial history commemorated everyday events that Sand either observed firsthand or made up. By installing plaques of the same size and style, Sand gave the same significance to everyday events as she did to the official history. To her, one was as important as the other. This was our chance to finally discover the real meaning behind the plaques. The first plaque I noticed in 2015, the one that kicked off this whole search, was dated 11:15 to 11:47 p.m. July 20th, 2002. This plaque commemorated everyday history based on time Sand spent in the courtyard. I'd always imagined the plaque commemorating a major event, so I wasn't prepared for the amount of detail Sand captured in such an everyday, almost banal moment.
I sat on this bench from 11:15 to 11:47 p.m. on the 20th of July. During this time, I heard several doors opening and closing, air conditioning hum, the sound of water running through pipes, distant traffic, shouts from a basketball game, footsteps on a metal staircase, and snippets of gossip about what happened last Saturday night. It felt a bit like I was eavesdropping.
The next plaque is dated 1978 to 1979. As we suspected, this plaque was connected to Jeff's mural, which was painted across the same time period. The official history was voiced by an actor who was supposed to sound like an art historian devoid of personality.
The mural entitled RMIT Started as a Working Man's College was painted by the team of artists listed on the side of the mural from between 1978 and 1979. It is unknown why the work was not dated.
The third plaque in the mystery is dated 1:15 p.m. Friday, 19th July, 2002. It's another piece of everyday history that Sand had either observed herself or made up.
A man wearing a navy blue pinstripe suit with a white shirt and a grey and yellow striped tie placed his half-eaten roast beef and salad sandwich here at 1:15 p.m. on Friday the 19th of July as he perused the sports section of The Age. My major point in that is really giving the everyday as much importance as normal history. So my sitting on that bench or the man, you know, eating a sandwich is as important perhaps as, you know, the date of sort of some historical event 100 years ago and maybe more relevant. And the laneways are, you know, an obvious way of doing it, because that's the unofficial history of the city. That's how the city works, how it's serviced, the real sort of guts, as opposed to the facades, which are, if you want, the official version of the city. This is what we're supposed to look at in awe. And the back is how it sort of operates and works, and it's the unofficial version. I'm a firm believer that the greatest research we can do is with our eyes. So if you just notice things, you know, you can speculate about things, then it's a, yeah, huge contribution to our life in the city. I mean, it gives you great joy if you can go look around the city and, you know, be surprised all the time. You know, I remember in architectural school and I was 19 and I went to a lecture and then went out and saw the whole city a different way. Like I understood what to look for and how it worked. And, you know, I'm internally grateful that my eyes were opened.
How do you feel about the fact that, you know, this more people might find out about this as a result of this podcast?
You've created your own history through this search, which is, I think, more interesting now, and more interesting to me now, than the actual plaques themselves or what was behind them at the onset. So I think that's really nice.
Finding out where the plaques came from kind of felt like when one of your favourite TV shows ends. You really want to watch it to see what happens, but you're sad because you realise you're never going to see new episodes again.
I was hoping for a non-conclusion to prolong the mystery or a chaotic end to the story. Maybe a stranger we found by chance who has been waiting for years to explain what the plaques mean.
I'd thought about these plaques for 3 years. I'd considered so many possibilities and imagined so many different scenarios, but that had now come to an end. The unknown presented a kind of wonder and curiosity that we so rarely get to experience these days. When was the last time you had a question that you couldn't find the answer to? If you're watching a movie and you need an actor's name, you can read the Wikipedia page. If you want to reconnect with someone from your childhood, you can search for them on Facebook. But if you find a tiny brass plaque with an obscure date in the middle of a university with no explanation
and no easy answers online. All you have is your imagination.
Among other things, the hunt for the plaques and their maker has encouraged me to properly look at and observe what is happening around me. If I can spend days in one area and miss the 30 plaques, what else am I missing? The mystery has also led me to two conclusions. One, that there are urban mysteries everywhere, and two, I shouldn't assume that a plaque is telling me something that is sad, heavy, or historically significant. It might just be the last remnants of a guy eating a roast beef sandwich.
That story was by Lindsay Green and Aaron Lewin. The supervising producers were Alison Chan, Bethany Atkinson-Quinton, Beth Gibson, and Beck Fari. This episode of All the Best was compiled and mixed by Alina Godwin with Sarah O'Malley. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Jordan Fennell. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music, and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe and give us a review. You know how to do it by now.